Hello, this is Karen, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading from the August 2025 issue of the Buffalo Latino Village on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Okay, our first article is titled Santiago Mass Farer. Okay. A tribute to Santiago Mass Farer. From Chile to Buffalo, his life reads like a powerful testimony to resilience, justice, and cultural solidarity. Born and raised in Chile, Santiago Mass Farer's early life was rooted in a deep concern for social equity. In 1973, during the Pinochet dictatorship, he was imprisoned for 22 months, six of them in solitary confinement, for redistributing food to families with children while working for the National Police. Prioritizing hungry children over bureaucratic orders cost him his freedom, but it solidified his lifelong commitment to justice. After enduring surveillance by Chile's secret police, Santiago and his wife, Eugenia, sought asylum in the U.S., arriving in Buffalo in 1977. One of his first encounters with the city's Latino community was through the Puerto Rican Chicano Committee, where he volunteered until PRCC successfully advocated for the hiring of Black and Latino guards at Attica Correctional Facility. Santiago was then hired there, making a quiet but lasting impact on incarcerated Latino men, providing English lessons, civic responsibilities, and general tutorial assistance. His journey of service deepened when he founded El Buen Amigo, a fair trade store and cultural hub housed in a nearly 200-year-old building on Elmwood Avenue. The name, meaning the good friend, embodies Santiago's ethos of care and solidarity. Today, more than 40 years later, El Buen Amigo stands as an institution. But it's more than a store. It's home to the Latin American Cultural Association, LACA, an organization Santiago founded to uplift Latin American heritage through arts, language, and educational programs. The storefront features handmade crafts from artisans across Latin America, offering economic support and cultural visibility to communities often overlooked. El Buen Amigo also became a literary gathering place. In 1992, New York City poet and writer Alberto Ocampos held a book signing there for his collection, Donna Julia, part of a literary program that welcomed both local and national voices. Santiago once said, "When you're not coming out, you're coming in," a reflection of how solitary confinement deepened his faith and self-awareness. His life's work has been about opening doors, both literal and metaphorical, for others, especially immigrants, students, and artists. Going deeper into his legacy, the visionary founder. A survivor of political repression, Santiago emerged with a vision of justice grounded in compassion and dignity. His belief in economic justice through fair trade and cultural empowerment through education shaped El Buen Amigo and LACA into enduring community treasures. The quiet architect of belonging. Behind the scenes, Eugenia, his wife and partner in purpose, was instrumental. She co-piloted dairy operations, nurtured artists and newcomers, and helped El Buen Amigo become a second home for many Spanish-speaking immigrants and refugees building a new life in Buffalo. A historic beacon. The Elmwood Avenue building that houses El Buen Amigo is both literal space and symbolic shelter, where stories of struggle and celebration find a home. Under Santiago and Eugenia's guidance, it's hosted language classes, musical performances, school field trips, and college internships in political science, accounting, and the arts, building bridges between Latin America and Western New York. A home for arts and advocacy. Through LACA, El Buen Amigo has become a sanctuary for the Latinx diaspora, hosting exhibits, poetry readings, and cultural programs that celebrate resistance and joy. Santiago's journey from political prisoner to cultural steward resonates deeply in a city shaped by migration. His philosophy, "Open the door to the community," is not a slogan, it's practice. Okay, our next article, "A People Cannot Survive Without Their Language." Taino Studies is in Cabaret, Dominican Republic, just minutes from where I used to live. They teach a class on Arawak language, and I highly recommend it, as it's offered online via Zoom. The words taught there are not ancient relics. They are part of living, breathing language used every day in Puerto Plata, Sozia, Cabaret, Santiago, Rio San Juan, Nagua, which is Arawak, means skirt, Samana, and beyond. These Arawak words are not just cultural remnants. They are silent witnesses to a living history woven into our language, our land, and our bodies. And yet, for centuries, we were taught to ignore them, to dismiss their value, to treat them as folklore, while others appropriated our culture and sold it as their own. The Dominican Republic was the heart of the indigenous peoples of the Caribbean. It was the spiritual, cultural, and political center of an ancestral network that connected islands and coastlines across the sea. We were not isolated islands, we were a maritime civilization. The term Taino is a colonial invention. It was imposed by the Spanish to divide us, to separate the good Indian from the bad Indian. Taino was the name given to those who submitted. Carib was the demonized term used for those who resisted. But they were not different people. We were the same. Same ancestors, same language, same lineage. It was the colonizers who needed to divide us, to control us, to justify extermination, theft, and enslavement. If there were good Indians, then there also could be bad ones, warriors, rebels, savages. But the truth is, they were all the same indigenous people, divided only by a colonial strategy of conquest. They told us the lie that Caribbean people were passive and easily defeated. All lies. The Caribs were the warriors, the strategists, the protectors of the sea. It's time to stop repeating colonial narratives. It's time to reconnect the truth and remember that you cannot understand the Caribbean without the Caribs. The word Carib does not come from a foreign land. It is us. As children of this land, it is our duty to retell our story, not with nostalgia, but with truth and power. We will not allow our story to be watered down, because those who control the story control the soul of the people. The history of the Caribbean begins here, and this time we'll tell it together, in our tongue, with our voices, and from our roots. Next, we have Educational Study Benefiting Latino Students. From Educational Studies by Bilingual Educators, it was made clear that culturally responsive teaching, CRT, methods can be transformative for our Latino students. Here's how they make a measurable difference. Academic gains through cultural relevance. Improved engagement. When lessons reflect students' cultural background, such as Latino history, literature, or community traditions, students feel seen and valued, which boosts participation and motivation. Higher achievement. Studies show that Latino students taught by culturally responsive teachers, especially bilingual educators, demonstrate stronger performance in reading and language arts, especially when bilingual instruction is included. Better retention of material. Connecting new concepts to familiar cultural experiences helps students grasp and retain academic content more effectively. Social-emotional benefits. Sense of belonging. CRT fosters a classroom environment where Latino students feel respected and included, reducing feelings of isolation and increasing confidence. Positive identity development. Students begin to view their bilingualism and cultural heritage as strengths, not deficits, which supports long-term academic resilience. Teacher-student relationships. Stronger rapport. Teachers who understand and incorporate Latino students' cultural norms and communication styles build trust and deeper connections. Higher expectations. Culturally responsive educators tend to hold high expectations for all students, challenging stereotypes and encouraging excellence. Long-term impact, reduced dropout rates. Latino students exposed to CRT in early grades are more likely to stay engaged through middle and high school. Increased college aspirations. When students see their culture reflected in the curriculum, they're more likely to envision themselves succeeding in higher education. Because Buffalo is Buffalo, and we know how politics has a habit of interfering with the education of our children, it is crucial that bilingual teachers and parents are allowed to take the lead in navigating the leadership within the system, and not community leaders or politicians who know very little about bilingual education or have no children in the school system. Let them assist from the outside. Listen to the teachers and parents and work on setting policies based on what they hear from the teachers and parents. And you are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Buffalo Latino Village on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Next, we have an article from Angelica Aquino, Esquire, MPA. Freedom of speech, bedrock to our democracy. One of the greatest rights we have as citizens is our freedom of speech, a true bedrock of our democratic system. The First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution reads, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances." I encourage you to take a moment and read the U.S. Constitution and the respective constitution of your home state. I believe that we have more in common in our diversity than values and issues that separate us from each other. I also believe that this is a pivotal time for community and civic engagement to support each other through community participation and planning. I encourage you to take a moment and research how the right path evolved and what it means in the context of the social challenges and economic challenges we are living in. As we become more of a digitalized society, what does freedom of speech mean in the context of artificial intelligence, and in the context of our ever-going digitalized world in which social media has somehow substituted our human touch and presence? Take whatever time you need to learn about the rich history of such a fundamental right. To start, I leave you with a few resources. Share, enjoy, reflect, and galvanize. And you can look up the usconstitution.net/freespeechversushatespeech and www.thefire.org. Next, we have new superintendent, a renewed call for equity. On August 15th, Dr. Pasquale Mbenga steps into his role as the new superintendent of Buffalo Public Schools. With over two decades of experience in public education and a reputation for system-wide reform, his appointment marks a pivotal moment for the Buffalo's students. But for many of us in the Puerto Rican and Latino community, this moment carries weight beyond introductions and credentials. It brings a question that has echoed for far too long. Will this administration finally see us, our students, vibrant, bilingual, deeply rooted in culture, have endured generations of systemic neglect. Past leadership left critical gaps in bilingual education, erased cultural representation from curricula, and failed to close achievement disparities. The silence has spoken volumes. Buffalo Latino Village welcomes Dr. Mbenga with cautious optimism. Progress isn't just about policy. It's about recognition. It's about presence. It's about the courage to dismantle inequity with action. We urge the district to launch a Latino Student Success Task Force to confront academic disparities head-on, recruit and retain bilingual educators who reflect the diversity of our classrooms, partner with Latino-led teachers and Latino organizations to bring culturally rooted programs into our school, publish transparent progress metrics that hold leadership accountable. Our children are not margins on a spreadsheet. They're the heartbeat of Buffalo's future. Their success should never be optional. Let's make sure this chapter isn't just ceremonial. Let it be transformational. Our Latino parents are tired of the tokenism. Next, we have an article from Victoria Ross. ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is acting illegally as on the attack in a way that is truly shocking. Agents en masse are coming with no identifying badges or numbers and kidnapping people without due process. ICE agents are both active in the city, on both the east side and west side of Buffalo, and throughout the countryside, taking people and incarcerating them without notice or due process. Some of these people are citizens. Some are fully compliant with asylum requests and are pursuing their asylum cases with due respect for the law. ICE agents, however, are showing no respect for the law. In fact, when ICE agents show up and take or attempt to take someone to incarceration in a detention facility using unmarked vehicles and hiding their identity, we begin to feel the tightening grip around our necks. This is what an authoritarian dictatorship looks like. Indeed, fascist governments such as the Third Reich Nazis in Germany did and do the same. Perhaps the only reason my father survived was that he was forced to flee so early on, 1933, as a 15-year-old, because he was such a radical and was out of the country before these terrible practices became even more widespread. Last month, the Western New York Peace Center's Latin American Solidarity Committee, LASC, monthly coffee house was ICE versus Buffalo, with reporter J. Dale Shoemaker sharing what he's learned about our government's illegal acts and disinformation on the topic. This month, the topic is further explored in ICE versus Farms and Workers on Monday, July 28th at 7 p.m. in Canisius University. Jim Bittner, a local farmer, will talk how the farmers need their farm workers when crops aren't harvested, when people are afraid to go out of their houses, when parents go missing and children are traumatized. We all pay. All are welcome to the coffee house and discussion. The fact that ICE agents are abducting people who are going to court in accordance with legal requirements just shows how rabid these authoritarian efforts are, as does deporting U.S. citizens and refusing to enforce returns for those illegally deported. We must stand up for each other. The erosion of our already very limited democracy is a frightening turn of events. We're all in this together. Heads Up Elbows UP, a continuation of solidarity of events with Canada. All that was going to be held on August 16th. Check out WNYpeace.org for more events, campaigns, and way to support each other, including more peacekeeper trainings coming soon. Next article, we have the other Latino brothers and sisters in Buffalo. Los Dominicanos and Mexicanos. If you meet another member of Buffalo's Latino community, keep in mind not every Latino in Buffalo is Puerto Rican. While Puerto Ricans have long shaped the city's cultural fabric, assuming all Latinos share that heritage overlooks Buffalo's vibrant and growing Dominican population. In fact, many restaurants within Puerto Rican neighborhoods are owned and operated by Dominicans, an often overlooked detail that speaks to the richness and diversity within our community. Take Cesar Cabrera, a longtime community leader and proud Dominican who ran for the Board of Education 2 years ago, or Gio Hernandez, a graduate of Canisius College and head of Buffalo's Working Families Party. Then there's Ari Alvarado, a Latina veteran and co-founder of El Barrio Caribe, who also pens a monthly column for Buffalo Latino Village. All three are Dominican, and all three are shaping Buffalo's Latino cultural and political landscape, and there are many others. Our Mexican-American community, once concentrated in Lackawanna, New York, may have declined in numbers but not in impact. Their legacy includes foundational contributions to local politics, education, and culture. Leaders from this community played instrumental roles in the creation of the Puerto Rican Chicano Committee, PRCC, the Mexican Club, the Chicano Student Union at UB, and even the Latin Journal publication. The Virginia Street Parade and the Father Bell Center, once led by Michael A. Rivera, a Mexican-American from Lackawanna and PRCC co-founder, are also rooted in this rich history. Juventino Mejia, another key figure, hosted Mexican music programming on WBFO and helped develop PRCC while serving as an administrator with CASCO, Consortium of Spanish-Speaking Organizations. We have also Susan Escabi, one of the leading Mexican Latina involved with PRCC and the Latin Journal. And last but not least, there was Francisco Rivera, owner of the first Mexican restaurant El Charo. And there are many others. Goal Art with Soul, Craftsmanship That Defines Us, Dionys Roman Rodriguez. Keeping Puerto Rican Culture Alive in the Diaspora. Being Puerto Rican in the diaspora does not mean being disconnected from our culture. On the contrary, it is often outside the island where the need to preserve, celebrate, and share our identity becomes even more powerful. Keeping our culture alive is an act of love, remembrance, and hope. Puerto Rican culture lives in our food, our music, our language, our stories, and in the way we connect with others. Every time we organize an event to share our heritage, curate an art exhibit inspired by our roots, or teach younger generations about our traditions, we are reinforcing that invisible thread that binds us to the island no matter how far we are. Recently, I had the privilege of participating in a cultural exhibit organized by and for our community. It was a modest space, but full of life, a celebration of Boricua talent, creativity, and ancestral memory. Seeing people of all ages come together around culture and art remind me that our identity does more than survive in the diaspora. It flourishes. Keeping our culture alive is not a burden, it's a joy. It means discovering new ways to express who we are, adapting without forgetting where we come from. It's our way of saying we are here and we are still us. The Puerto Rican diaspora holds vibrant energy, generosity, and deep commitment to cultural identity. We don't need grand platforms to express it. All it takes is the will to create, share, and teach. Every gesture, no matter how small, plants the seed of pride and cultural awareness in future generations. To celebrate who we are is also to resist invisibility. It is to affirm that our roots travel with us, sustain us, and continue to grow wherever we are. And as long as we can keep speaking, creating, cooking, dancing, and dreaming as Puerto Ricans, our culture will not only live, but it will also shine. And next, we just need to say it, a grateful tribute to El Beti Puerto Rican Center. The Latino Village would like to express their deepest appreciation to El Beti Puerto Rican Center. It's no secret that their presence in Buffalo, New York has sparked a revolutionary wave of growth and development in our Puerto Rican community's history, arts, education, and culture. There's a vibrant energy and visibility, a brilliant platform that this Buffalo community has never seen before. El Beti opened its doors to countless artists, cultural businesses, and community leaders, all of whom are now reaping the fruits of El Beti's labor. The true magic, the miracle, lies in how this was accomplished with little to no support from the public or private sectors. Instead, the driving force came from our community's own lifeblood, parents, volunteers, and passionate advocates. El Beti reminds us that when culture is nurtured by people, it doesn't just survive, it flourishes. And you've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the August 2025 issue of the Buffalo Latino Village. Your reader has been Karen. Thank you very much for listening and hope you have a good day and take care of yourself. Okay, goodbye.